You've tuned into the Rev Up podcast, broadcasting straight from Ducati Sanford in sunny central Florida. We're not just talking motorcycles, we're diving deep into the brilliant minds of business leaders, entrepreneurial pioneers, speed demons on the track, influential game changers, and downright rad people crushing this game called life. Let's rev up.
All right, welcome to the Rev Up podcast. I'm Nate, and we got Ducati Dave here. Got an awesome guest here today, Josh Myers. He has been a long time friend of the store,
family
member of the store, and he's a local racer. He's got some really cool stories to share, in addition to talk about what he does for a living, which is awesome too. So we're excited to have you, man. Welcome.
Thank you.
For coming, brother.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Awesome, man. So, dude, kind of fill us in on your background or how we kind of got connected first, and kind of talk about your stuff.
So kids, right? The kids finally got grown up enough to where I could feasibly go out and get a bike and not get kicked out of my house. You know what I mean? So I came up there, and actually I found the bike online, the SP, the first one, called Dave about it. And he's like, I got it. It's got it in stock, and nobody really had them, but Dave did. So I went up there and spoke to Dave and signed the deal, shot him. I think I shot you the money over the phone.
Yeah.
Without even seeing the bike, I was hot for the bike. So
that's how we roll.
That's it. So I went up there, got the bike, and then I told Dave when I was getting it that I'm gonna be racing this thing, man.
And
I'm sure.
Clicked.
Yeah, I felt like everybody says that to him. You know what I mean? But I meant it. You know what I mean? So I got the bike and started racing, and that's it. That's how I got to
to
know you guys.
To talk a little bit about it, and you were shooting me pictures because every time most of our meeting track days.
Yeah.
When we were talking, we knew a lot of the same people. And so I said, well, do this. Once you start racing it, send me pictures. You know, let me know how things are going, right? So he starts, and he's winning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the shit? He's winning, right? So I start, sharing his stuff. And he's getting bigger and bigger, and his name's getting bigger and bigger. And that was your first season, right? Back after how many years? Because I raced till
probably 20 years.
Yeah, 05.
Yeah.
That was when I was racing. And then you come up on a Ducati, which nobody else is running, which was, why'd you go that route?
Because it's the Lamborghini motorcycles, man.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? Like, I love that bike. Like, I've just always had one. When I was younger, we would race down they call it so many names, West Palm Beach, Moroso.
Yeah.
So when I was racing, it was Moroso.
Moroso, yep.
And everybody had the 916.
Yes.
Right? Like everybody was riding that bike, and it sounded like an airboat going around the track. When we were at Daytona, you would tell when the Ducatis were coming around, because it would literally sound like an airboat was blowing past you, loud, thundering. I just loved it, man. So when I seen the way that these new bikes looked, and clearly they'd been winning on the bike, right? So some of that technology was passing down. I was like, I'm going to go for it, man. It's a Ducati.
What was your first race? You went to, was it Homestead?
Homestead,
yeah. And tell us what happened.
So Homestead, I went down there and started, just started getting after it, man. I got down there, set up, started meeting some people. I actually went for track day first and met BPM Racing German down there. Yeah. I don't know if you guys know him, but he's one of the guys that goes down there and he brings bikes down to the track and lets people race, stuff like that. And he showed me some things where he followed me around a couple times because he saw that I was fast, right? Because I started off in the intermediate group, and he's like, no. You need to go up. So he showed me some things, and then next thing you know, I'm down there for a race, and
Meet Sean Sloan there too, or did you already know Sean?
I met Sean at a Roebling day before I went there to race officially.
Okay.
Right? So I wanted to get up there and feel that track out before I did it, but Sean was the only other person there with a Ducati.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I saw him, I was like, and I didn't know how to work on my bike because I don't have, it requires tools, right? Like it's, you know what I mean? They don't just have these big rear nuts for the bike. And so I had to get up with Sean. Sean showed me some things, but For the Homestead thing, I'd raced there when I was a kid, so I knew the track pretty well. We'd spoke about it when you tell me about the bike and me telling you about I was going to get in the race, and you're like, watch the concrete patches.
Yeah.
So the whole time I'm down there, it'd been so long, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going wide. I'm trying to avoid the concrete patches. I'm like, Dave is just in my head, like concrete.
Watch the patches.
So luckily, there was no rain, stuff like that, so I did really well that weekend. I think I won three or four races out of five or six. They made some mistakes on the on the lineup, starting grid, stuff like that, and have me misplaced, and there wasn't anything they could do about it at the time. But this is also when Azra just got collected and repurchased by a new group,
yeah.
Right? So they had to work some kinks out, which, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, Homestead went really well.
So what's up with the concrete patches? I mean, is it's that, a is car, it more slicker? Or?
So it's a car track as well as a motorcycle track.
Okay.
So the cars tear it up. And what happens is they have to kind of fix the holes in the patches, and, you know, or like, so they patch the holes or the gashes from people crashing and the cars just ripping it up, right? So what happens is it's slippery versus the regular concrete that's been sitting there or asphalt,
right?
You know what I mean? So, and what happened to me is I was in the corner and slipped out of it, and that is what hurt me, right? Yeah. So when we were talking, that's why I told him that. But they do that. Even Jennings, as Jennings was getting older and older, they were starting to just patch certain things and only fix certain areas, but it's losing its grip.
Gotcha. So, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially when it gets wet.
Right. Yeah, especially when it gets
wet. Or damp. Like, like we were talking about this at the shop. Dave leans more off the bike, whereas I lean with the bike. And sometimes I'll get the bike real low, and I'm riding on a very minimal amount of tire.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you're allowing yourself to spin the rear up, right? And so on those parts of the track, you can find yourself going flying and end up in a very bad way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So after that race, I just remember you calling me. And first you sent me the pictures, and then I think either I called you or you called me. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing, right? So he's on this SP, not just any freaking Ducati. He's racing an SP, right? Dry clutch, everything.
Electronic
found
suspension,
some things not to do. We find out he had some clutch issues, and I remembered from working at Yamaha that the R1s had that launch control.
Yeah.
What happened was a lot of the guys that were racing and doing track days, they were using the launch control and slipping the clutch. Well, you can't do that. What happens is it automatically fries the clutch. You gotta, and him and I are old school. You're old school. Yeah. In your brain, can you tell yourself on a motorcycle, give it full blast and dump the clutch? We've been taught our whole lives you're not allowed to do that, right? The bike will flip up and go crazy, right? Well, you have to have trust in this bike that you're turning on the launch control, that you did it right. It tells you to go full throttle and dump the clutch.
Wow.
So at first, when he first destroyed the clutch, we figured some things out, and I was talking to him, and I remembered from Yamaha that happened.
Yeah.
And so I told him, I said, listen, when you're doing your starts, are you doing our old school start, you know, literally slipping the clutch out like that? And he's like, yeah. And I'm using the launch control. I'm like, you can't do that. You actually have to just dump that clutch. So he figured it out, and it made him even faster too.
Which was a learning process, right? Because you have to unprogram yourself because it's wild, man. Like, you've got this thing pegged at like 10,000 RPM, and it's saying, release the clutch. You're like, I don't know.
And if you do it slow, it's gone. And that's a $3,300 problem.
Yeah. It's something that I came to find out real quick. I need to learn how to get that bike off the starting line without the clutch.
Yeah.
Without feathering it, at least. So, but once I got that down pat, it was pretty good launches. I feel like the SP launched a lot better. I had more luck launching the SP than the R.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the V4R.
Yeah, okay, yeah, okay.
So finish off. So you started your season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you did really good, right? So you started winning. And then we got the info that the V4R was coming out. And so he calls me and says, hey, I want to put a deposit down on the first V4R. So we get it. And he's doing really good and getting ready to do Daytona. And we go into Daytona and another clutch problem, right? So do you remember this?
I do.
I'll let you talk about that.
Well, so going into Daytona, like the clutch is slipping. Now, to back it up a little bit, it started happening to me at SMP, right? And I was killing it at SMP. I should have walked away with all first places that weekend, but I got two firsts and then a third, and I was trying. Like, I had such a lead that I was able to figure out where I could and couldn't get on the throttle quick from.
Yeah.
And I was able to secure that third, but after that, it was just toast. I couldn't do anything else with it. So once we did that, we got the new clutch, and then Daytona. So Daytona, the clutch went again, and Dave is the man.
No.
Yeah, he really helped me out. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No,
Ducati, like everybody, Ducati helped me out. It was a team effort. Like,
listen, Nick, Wayne, they all.
I think I got involved in
it.
You did.
Yeah.
It's a team effort. Yeah. Everybody helped out. Did. Like,
all hands on deck.
So yeah. You called me up just freaking out. One, you went down. You got hit by a guy, right?
Yeah. So
I blew the corner.
Turn one, first race of my weekend, turn one. This is the championship race, right? It's champion. Yeah, it's race of champions.
Yeah. I have five of them inside the shop.
Yeah. It's a race of champions. So, turn one, first race, got my garage mate, the dude right next door to me, which made it even more awkward after the fact, right? So he runs wide and no look comes right back onto the track. And as soon as he went wide, the gap opened up.
You shot it.
So I'm like, let's do it. And I ran right through it and he came right back on track. I couldn't do anything but sit the bike up. Yeah. As soon as I did, I got ejected off the bike. It fell on the right side. Handlebar's gone.
Winglet's gone somewhere.
Winglet's in heaven right now, right? Like I believe the peg broke off, right? You guys had an extra peg up there that I was able to secure on with a wild bolt. But you guys came through. Got me.
Called me up and just freaking out. And I'm like, let me see what I can do. We grab a bike off the showroom floor and we rip off the handlebars. Oh man, everything that he needed. I had the text and he's literally driving from Daytona to us as we're waiting for him. We have everything in a box and runs back to the shop. Now wait, let me tell you what happened with the clutch situation. So we ordered a part and a part came, you know, sometimes they get mixed up, whatever. And somehow a part came wrong. So he didn't have that part of the clutch. We couldn't get it. And no, there's no way we were going to get it.
So In time for the race.
So I started calling customers. I had a couple of guys that I knew that had two bikes and they both had dry clutches and stuff like that. So I called the first one and I said, hey man, listen, I got a weird favor to ask. I know you have two bikes. They both have dry clutches. I said, would you let me borrow the clutch out of your V4R? I'll give you a brand new one. Mm-hmm. All right. And we'll give you I think we said we'd give him like a $500 or $250 or $500 gift card to spend at the shop. And the guy said, no, I'm not doing that. And I made another call to a dude in Miami who was a good customer of ours, Chris. And we end up figuring it out, right? But as he calls back, he goes, yeah, come get my bike. And I'm like, well, we found out, but we got the part, but thank you, right? So we get everything. He's at the race, and that dude...
I've got people coming up to me saying, are you the guy that needed the clutch? I'm like, I'm the guy. He's like, and like four of them are like, I had... Dave called us up and asked if we could borrow the clutch. And we're like, no. I was like, well, thanks. I mean, you know, it is what it is. But we got it fixed. And I couldn't have done it without Nate and Dave. Like, I mean.
Now let me go win this race.
Yes. That's it.
And watch me go win
this race. And it was so funny, too, because I didn't know that you were going to run into them. And you call me laughing. He's like, dude, one of the guys, and then another one that you called trying to get the clutches from are sitting there talking to me, telling me, yo, David tried to get the clutch from me.
Right. It's in the periphery. I'm just at the races, like focusing on everything. And then these guys are like, we had somebody calling up to borrow our clutch. Dave called you to ask to borrow your clutch. I mean, that's not like a pair of sunglasses, you know what I mean? Or a hat to go out with. Like, that's a $3,000 piece of art. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I put a lot of, effort and thought into you guys because one, you come to us, you know, you could have bought that bike anywhere, right? I've been talking about doing teams and really helping you guys out as much as we possibly can.
Right.
I know Motivita helps you out as well, Miguel. Right. And so I didn't want you, I know how the Race of Champions is. I know how important it is. So I was willing to do anything I could personally do to help you get back on that track. And that's what we did. You know what I mean?
I couldn't have did what I did at that race weekend without you guys, for sure. So it's, I did. And you know, it's, I feel like I probably could have done better, but I went down twice that weekend and I still have to have surgery on my shoulder. So it's,
you had a lot on your plate.
I did. And I had a lot of stuff on my mind too. I had my family there. I had friends down from out of state and yada, yada. So it was a little overwhelming because I put too much on myself thinking that I was just going to smash everything. And to be fair, the person who took most of the race wins that weekend in my division was somebody that I just dominated in North Carolina bike.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, Travis.
It happens.
Travis fast that weekend, you know. So he set the par that weekend. And there's another guy, Dave West, right behind me. And while my bike was down, I was just running around trying to help this guy do well. And he ended up getting the Amateur of the Year.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. He raced the AMA race. I didn't know that I was eligible to race that race because it said AMA. So I figured it was like a...
like a provisional. Thing. You could have got a provisional.
Right. I thought it was a thing for the weekend for like the spectators. Like right. They're going to have an AMA race there for the weekend. But it ended up, it was just the AMA was doing the nationals there for the people that are in Azra. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So had I done that race, I'd have ended up getting Amateur of the Year.
You would have.
And Kyle Weatherford, I love that dude. He's just been like, he's like, you know, you could have been amateur national champion, right? You know, you could have been the national amateur champion, right? I was like, you know,
that. Yeah.
I'm not ever going to forget it. That's for sure.
You know what I mean? So before Ducati, you know, you came into our shop, you bought this Ducati, you said you're going to get into racing and you're doing, accomplishing all these amazing things. Like, you had to have had some type of background in racing before. I mean, what were you on before? Like,
I was on an old crappy R6 back in 2000. I think it was in 2000. I was racing 2000, 2001. And I was racing the R6. And I was doing every race I entered, I won. But okay. I didn't have the money because I was 20.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? My parents aren't rich. I don't come from a wealthy background. And
it's expensive.
I didn't have much of an education to speak of or to put myself in a position to where I could get the money to race. So whenever I got the money, I'd ride the bike down there, right?
Oh, my God.
Swap out tires, cover everything up, or for track days. And when I was actually racing, Buddy would let me borrow his trailer. I bought a pair of leather skins, and I'd go race.
Yeah.
And I'd kill it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like 2 or 3 seconds faster than most of the people there, you know? That was back when Prieto was a racer.
Right,
remember
Prieto
that?
Racing. Yeah, yeah,
man. Shane. The dude just, Shane just walking wheelies down the whole stretch of Barossa. Dude. Like, it was wild. So
Aaron Luck, all those guys.
I knew I could be fast, but I never in my wildest dreams would imagine I would have won as much as I did this season.
I was so proud of you, man. We have your picture. You made a really cool picture for us. And we have Sean Sloan with his Pan America trophies. And then we have you with your trophies. And I love showing people about that.
Well, it's cool because, you know, when you're in your 20s and you're hard charging in life and riding motorcycles and, you know, just having the time of your life, right? And then you get married, you have kids, life gets in the way.
That's
and you get kind of tied down and you're always thinking in the back of your head, like, I just want to ride again. I want to get a bike again, but I can't right now. You know, I got kids, I got this. And then the kids grow up or you get in a different position. Could be years and years and years later, 20 years later, whatever. And then you're like, you know what? I'm in the right place in my life. I'm going to go and I'm going to do this and I'm going to get that motorcycle and I'm going to ride again. And you actually prove that and you do it and you're doing it at a whole other level.
Right.
I mean, it's just crazy.
I was thinking about it every day since 2000, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
That's, I feel like I was put here to race something. You know what I mean? Like, it's just all I think about. It's all my daughter and I do is watch the races, like Formula One, MotoGP,
me and my boys,
Superbike. Yeah. Like, that's all we do. Like, you know, but it's, there's a lot of people that help me understand my passion and learn to dial it in. You know what I mean? Like the Pepins, Travis Pepin taught me a lot. Now his son Gage is winning, the FTR championships and stuff like that. He's killing it. Little kids like 12 or 13 doing 70-foot jumps. Like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like my kids, I got a 13-year-old son. I'm like, I could not imagine my kid flying through the air like that.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, to your point, Nate, like, you know, with the family and stuff, my wife has been very understanding, right? Like,
very understanding.
Begrudgingly understanding.
At first, she did not like me very much.
No, she was like, Dave. Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't want to talk about Dave right now.
Yeah, she's amazing,
though. You know, but yeah, I couldn't have done it without my family support. My kids look up to me now like I'm some hero.
You are.
You know what I mean?
You really are.
It's crazy.
You're not a spring chicken and you're out there running with these young kids and
whooping them.
Yes.
Decent.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
You know what I mean? Whooping
on a Ducati. Yeah.
That's it.
Most people shy away from it on the track because it is not a cheap bike.
Yeah.
It is
nobody.
Not
nobody carries parts at the track.
Right. It's that, like, most of, even when I was racing, when I was riding my R6 and all that, if you crash, probably 10 people have the parts, you know, that you can grab and move over and stuff like that. Not a Ducati. Yeah.
That's what killed me in South Carolina or North Carolina was they didn't have the clip-ons, right? So, and the closest Ducati dealership was like 4 hours away. It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, I'm never going to make it. So, but I mean, you couldn't ask for a better bike. First year out, that bike is just killing it off the gate. Like most times you get a new bike that's come out, you know, they've done some proving with it, but that doesn't mean it's all going to translate to the production.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct.
So to have gotten that bike and and just killed it. I mean, it's stock suspension.
Yeah.
Stock suspension. I've done nothing. No pipe, no filter, no nothing. Just the stock bike.
Yep.
And I'm killing it. I missed taking the national champion title by 0.088 seconds. Mm, right? Wow. Like, Travis got me. I had it lined up. Yep. And I was leading coming out of the chicane.
Yep.
And
yeah.
Or excuse me, that wasn't that, not that, that, that specific race. I wasn't leading. He was leading, but I had it lined up.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I just couldn't pull around him. And,
really?
You know, it is what it is, but I had the time of my life, man. Like I was lucky to be able to finish that weekend. And like, it was just amazing.
So what do you do now, like for a living that, allows you to do this?
So I have a bioluminescent kayaking company. That's the one where you touch the water, it glows neon blue, you run your hands in it, sparkles, yeah. Like you pick it up, you can see it drop into your hand or run down your arms, looks like blue alien veins, you know what I mean? Only happens in 5 places in the world. Year after year in the same location. Periodically, you can see it pop up in different locations.
What's the name of your company?
Florida Adventurer.
Florida Adventure.
FloridaAdventure.com for anybody listening. You know? but yeah, these tours go out all year long. Peak season for the bioluminescence is going to be in the summertime, like May through the end of October, right? And then in the off season, we have bioluminescent comb jellyfish. Kids love them. Moms hate them. Slimy, nasty. Yeah. Everybody thinks you're going to get stung, but they're really neat. You put them in your hands. You can pet them. They light up neon teal. You know, we do manatee and dolphin tours, stuff like that. Merritt Island National Wildlife Refuge is the pinnacle of refuges in the United States. It is the, it has the most biodiverse ecosystem, the Indian River Lagoon does, of the entire northern continent.
That's so amazing.
That's a huge statement, right? Yeah. Like the northern continent, that includes Canada, Alaska, Red Rocks, Grand Canyon, and I know it's not Canada, but Grand Canyon, New York, Canadian. All these places,
yeah.
And we kill everybody in the biodiversity that's at this place. So
that's there's amazing.
I've never knew that. I've always wanted to do that. I've heard of those types of things.
Well,
but I didn't know it was right here in my own backyard.
I didn't even know because he had told me about it. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I didn't know what it was, right? And I'm seeing these videos online of these in our backyard of dudes sticking their hands in and bringing this blue water. I'm like, what the? And you actually invited me and my family to go out.
Yeah.
And we went, and it was the coolest thing. You have to do this. You really
going
do.
To.
Yeah,
you have to do this.
Whenever you're ready.
Yeah. I'll book today.
Yeah, you'll never forget it.
No.
You know what I mean? It's a memory that'll last a lifetime. We also have wildlife out there.
It'd actually be cool to like bring the whole team out there, like do like a team building thing. We go out there.
Well, we do that too.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're in tandem kayaks. They call these things the divorce boat.
Yes.
Right? So
yeah. I put my wife with my other kid and
there you
I
go.
Had one kid because I knew I would, yeah, it wasn't going to work.
The car ride home is much better like that. You know what I mean? Like I've had to give two guys a ride home because some of these people, like you get these, and nothing personal, ladies, but you get these New York people that come down and they're hot under the collar. You know what I mean? Like, I love them. They're amazing people, but they speak their mind and it takes them a bit to cool off. I've had to give a couple guys a ride back to the Cumberland Farms across the bridge because Uber won't come out and pick you up. You're in the middle of a wildlife refuge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Gosh, yeah.
So it's funny. It's really funny. But we have manatee out there by the hundreds come March. Because breeding season, you have dolphin out there. I've got videos of dolphin jumping out of the water. Like, this is the Keys.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
It's really, really
amazing. Anytime that you go out there. But before, most people know about the Bayamon Bay, right? In Puerto Rico.
Uh-huh.
Is the main place people know to go see this.
Oh, really?
But that hurricane that come through like 4 years back that hit Puerto Rico, 5 years back, it devastated the residency of the bioluminescence there. The plankton.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's devastated their tourism business. Because a lot of that revolved around that. So unfortunately for them, but lucky for us, it's brought a lot of people here that would typically go out of country to see that because, not really out of country, but go to a tropical destination.
Right,
you know
what I mean?
Florida, people don't really consider it tropical like they do Puerto Rico.
Right.
The heat they do, but the environment, right? Because it's Florida. It's part of the continental U.S.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's...
So during, it's hard to kind of like figure this out, but like on the weekends, you're absolutely destroying a racetrack, horsepower, like just going hard. And then during the week, you're like floating around in this like
giving tours, talking about
trippy, like,
right.
Like water,
with the speed of the current.
Cool,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I am a Gemini, you know what I mean?
Right. Talk about two different worlds, man. And it's so relaxing. Well,
yeah.
Okay. So the way they take you out, you have to get past that current, right? And that's usually where everybody's fighting. But once you get into this one area that they do, it's so relaxing. And the guy starts talking about, you know, all the stuff. And they, I don't want to give it away, but it's really neat. And so you're sitting there kind of floating around and you're pedaling and it's so relaxing. And then you think this dude's out there doing almost 200 miles an hour at Daytona.
That's what I'm saying. So that actually leads to my question. So like when you're going into these races, I mean, how do you prepare like as far as a mindset? Like when you're on that grid, you're getting ready to go.
Slipknot. Like
James Root, okay. Huh?
Right. Slipknot. Yeah.
So
yeah.
ACDC. You're playing music, aggressive music, getting your blood pumping.
Yeah. ACDC. That's my, I don't mind flying, but I took a long break from flying once my family came about, you know what I mean? So recently I went up to see my niece and my, he's not my real brother, but he's my brother, you know what I mean? Yeah. He sent me the plane ticket down. He's like, you're flying up. I'm like, oh man, you know, because my thing is what happens to my family if something happens to me.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
that's how we all think.
That's it. So I don't like getting on the planes like that, but, as soon as I got on the plane, I'm looking for my Spotify, like, where's ACDC? Where is All right, here we go, right? I need a window seat. I got to see where I'm going, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, it's the go-to music, you know? It gets you back in the mindset where you need to be
at. Music is so powerful, like, when you play that right song, man, that's what we do in the shop. I mean, when you walk into our shop, it's unlike a lot of the other Ducati shops you probably go into. We're banging music. We're doing all kinds of different stuff. We're having fun.
I love the guys at Ducati Pompeii, but when you walk in there, it's like a mortuary, right? It's super quiet. You could hear a frog fart. Like, oh my God, that wasn't me. I swear to God. Yeah. You know, but
we try to give it a little bit of different vibe, man.
Lighting. Sanford is definitely the place, man. And dude, I met James Groot, like lead guitarist of Slipknot up in there.
Oh, you met him?
Yeah. I'm not going to not beat that guy.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, bro, that dude is crazy. Yeah. You listen to their music?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
No, wait, you want to hear all right, so here's the story real quick. So him and his buddy came, and his buddy went to the Indian side to buy a
FTR,
right? And so we're closed. Now listen to me. It is 6 o'clock. Bikes were pushed in. The doors got the truck in front of it. And this big dude walks by me, and all of a sudden I get a phone call. And he goes, hey, go talk to this dude. I think I just read an article on some magazine, he told me. And he goes, I think that's James Root from Slipknot. And I go, oh, I don't know. So I go over and we start talking, and we're talking about a V4R in the 2020, right? And funny story, we had a tall guy there and we had rear sets on it. And so I put the rear sets all the way down. So he's like, yeah, I never fit on these things. And I said, well, jump on this one because it's different. And he does. So as we're talking, I go, hey, what do you do? And he goes, oh, I'm in a little band. I go, yeah, he goes, Slipknot. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it is you. You know?
Right.
So it was really cool. And he just became a part of us from that day, and his buddy Ed. And so they come by, and then now he's bought a couple bikes from us, and then you got to meet him. He came, he rode all the way by himself from where he lives to our party, just to hang out with us that night for our, Ducati Sanford party.
Yeah, it was cool. Good dude.
Yeah, it was really cool. But to get back to your point, like, what was I doing in the meantime? So before I got the SP, remember I traded that KTM in, right? That SCMR 600.
Oh my God,
I
forgot about that.
So, that thing, it was getting to the point, it got stolen. Somebody stole it off the front, out right under the carport. Well, I've got a garage, but overhang of my garage, somebody stole it right broad daylight, right? My wife's like, is your bike over at the neighbor's house? Because sometimes I'll be moving stuff around and I don't want nothing to happen to my bike, even if it's a, you know, Motard or something like that. So
you never told me about this.
Yeah. So the, and it's funny because I actually caught him and got to handle business, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So, what happened was, is they stole it a couple days before New Year's Eve, and my wife calls me. She's like, did you park the bike over at the neighbor's house? I'm like, no, it should be sitting right there next to the garbage can. She's like, it's not. And I'm like, do me a favor, go over and check at Amy's and see if it's over there. So I'm driving back from down south, and she's like, bike's not there. I'm like, I know I'm old, but did I forget where I parked my bike at? I was like, no, the bike's at the house. So we end up calling the police, and they come over to take the report and stuff, and pushing on New Year's Eve, we're out there lighting off fireworks. I'd had a couple drinks, and my bike goes by.
Ooh.
It's all black, right? Like, it was orange. I had the sticker kit on it, the straws on the tires, orange straws on the tires, everything's black. But I knew the sound of it, right? Like, you're not getting my bike past me in my neighborhood. So I'm like, that's my bike, I think. right? But I had a couple drinks. I didn't want to go chase anybody down. So I couldn't sleep. Couldn't really get in the party mode that night because I'm suffering the loss of a loved one. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, like, right. Yeah, that's your baby. That's my, you know? Yeah, man. We get attached.
Bro, like, you have no idea the connection you have with your bike. But once they, the next morning, I you know, I couldn't stay up late. I couldn't get in the groove with everybody else. So I went to bed. Right, I woke up next morning. I'm doing yard work outside like 8 a.m. And here goes the sound of my bike. I'm like, no shit. So I run out front and I try to, because I live on the corner, right, of a main, not a main road, but I live on a corner. So the side street goes to the main road that goes through our neighborhood. And I try to catch him, but he just passed. So I run from there and I run out into the street to see if I can catch a glimpse of the bike at the end of the road as he goes past the other way. And this dude turns down my street. I'm like, is that my bike? And meanwhile, my wife is in the house watching me.
Right.
Because she heard
the
bike.
Right.
So I walk across the street. I'm getting on the sidewalk. And I'm just kind of like trotting, you know, a little bit. Yeah. And he turns it because I couldn't tell if it's my bike. But then he goes to turn in the driveway. And I had a mirror only on the left side handlebar.
Right.
And as soon as he turned, I was like, that's my bike.
Yeah.
So I start running. As soon as I start running, she called the cops because
she knew what time it was.
So I run down there. I'm like, hey, bro, nice bike. And gave him a little forearm right in the helmet, knocked him off the bike. Yeah. And as this happens, this is a drug house, mind you, right? Oh. Like this, we've had problems with this house for months because all the bicycles are going stolen, right? And that's where I originally went to go down there and check to see. You know, I called the police. Like, these guys have to have something to do with it. They're stealing all the bikes. They're selling drugs. Like, bad people. Bad. So I go down there, and it's like, as I give the dude the old hello, the a U-Haul pulls up, and it's like four of them in there, right?
Whoa,
and they come out there and start, what are you doing in our house? Leave him alone, da-da-da-da-da. And as they're all in my face, this dude's kind of like sneaking out the back going down the street. I'm like,
it's
like, we didn't steal your bike. He did. And I'm like, you're right.
You're right.
And so I leave them and start running. And all my neighbors have cameras because this house is so full of terrible people.
Oh,
right.
My God.
So I run after this dude. He runs in the back of my kid's friend's house. Right. And as soon as he gets back there, there's a dog off the chain. So he comes right back at me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's go, dude. You're not going nowhere. I'm on the phone with 911. Right. Yeah. And, I'm like, he's trying to get away. They're like, well, don't do it. I was like, and I dropped the phone. I'm just like hammering this dude, right?
Oh, man.
He says, forget this. He jumps over the fence with the dog. You know what I mean? So I go back there and I tackle him, put his arm behind his face. You're going to break my arm. You break my arm. He's like, I got drugs. I got a pistol on me. I'm going to shoot you. I'm like, I got you. You ain't going nowhere, buddy. The cops come through. He's like, my arm. He wouldn't get up. He's like acting like he's faint, passed out. Right. But anyways, I've got all this on tape.
Yeah.
Like, Everything. Neighbor sent it to me. And I just put a little thing together, bro. It's like you watch me running down the neighborhood, and then you see me interacting with these people, and then I chase the dude back behind the house and just put the hands on him.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see me over there. He's like begging for it, like, please don't. It was beautiful, man. But,
citizen's arrest.
Right.
How often does that happen, though? You know what I mean?
He didn't think he was going to know that it was
I
think they sold it to him and he didn't know where it came from.
Oh my.
Do you know what I mean? God. And so it turns out this guy had like 30 ounces of meth on him or something like that. He's in court the next day, like no bond.
Yeah, these tweakers don't.
Yeah.
Bro, like they
spray painted your bike?
No, they just pulled everything off
all
of
the
it,
stickers
right? All the stickers off of it. But what they did do is they pried the ignition out of it, right? Like, so I had to have all that stuff replaced. And that was at the time I was like, you know what? I'm done. I want to get a real bike. You know what I mean? Because I had there's no chicken lines on my tires.
No chicken
nothing like that. My wife's like, you could kill yourself with that.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I was like, I need to get something I can't ride on the street. I don't really ride the V4 on the street.
No.
Unless I come out to see you guys.
Yeah,
you know
or
I mean?
You, when you were breaking it in and stuff like that.
Just the track.
The right way. Yep.
Just the track.
Yeah.
So
you took your stolen bike and came and traded in with us. Huh?
Yeah, I just realized that.
Yeah, man.
I just realized that.
Yeah, man.
Wow, good job.
But everything was everything looked good.
Yeah,
it was fixed.
No,
it was all fixed.
Man, you find out things later, don't you?
Shout out Space Coast ATM, KTM, for fixing it all up for me. And to be fair, the dude Dustin, the manager there, he's the one that really got me into the racing because he had been racing.
Yeah.
And I love Dustin, but I was like, Dustin's not very aggressive.
Right.
You know what I mean? I was like, well, if Dustin's racing and winning, I feel like I can race and win. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I started racing. And then for whatever reason, I think Dustin had some personal issues that prohibited him from racing, but we didn't get a chance to race together. We raced together at the track day at Daytona, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we got to race together on track day at Daytona because he shared a garage with me.
Yeah. Right?
And this guy, Tom, killed it on a KTM the whole weekend. Like, he took first in every single race. I can't for the life of me remember his last name, but he took it on a KTM for that class. And it was like a, it's not the SCMR, but it was the other one that they raced, the KTM. It's like a, almost like your bike, kind of like a, yeah, like a Duke.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe like a Duke or something like that, but he was killing it. Yeah. And so I was like, all right, well, I can do this. You know what I mean? So I ended up coming up there shortly after and seeing you and getting that, that SP, which, you know, I didn't even know it. Yeah. I was just wanting a Ducati, you know, and I didn't realize that the electronic suspension is not something you want on the track and stuff like this. And so I was like, F it. I really love the way this bike looks, right? I love the way it sounds, the way it felt. Like, I love it.
Yeah,
I'm taking it.
And I explained that because people get it backwards. So they think that the V4S is for the track and the, I'm sorry. Yeah. And the V4 is for the street and the V4S is for the track. And it's the other way around because the electronic suspension, you can't dial in. Mm. So I always have to explain that. So when I was telling him, I'm like, you sure you want to do it on this bike? And he's like, yeah. And gets on the damn track and kills it on that.
With, right. So I was like, you know what I can do? I wonder what I can do with a real bike that's designed for the track. Oh, you know what I mean? So, but each bike has its different things. Like that SP had a lot of grunt to it.
Yeah.
Whereas the V4 didn't. But that could be chalked up to me not having the pipe or something like
little
that. You know
like
what I mean?
That. Yeah.
But to be fair, I it was my intention to race that thing without any of that because I you know, how much can you really put into a bike with a wife and kids?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, she's in my ear constantly. So, but I love her. Yeah. I love her very much. But she allowed me to do it, and I had to be respectful to some of the requests.
Are you racing this next year?
Yeah, we're getting out there. Miguel has been a aside from you guys, Miguel's been a very big sponsor for me, right? In regards to, you know, races, helping clothes, stuff. Apparel, stuff like that.
Yeah,
like
it's tires.
Yeah. Motovita is the man. So, but yeah, no, I couldn't have done it with, it's a team effort. Mm. You know what I mean? Like it literally takes a team and I couldn't have done it without the help of you guys. Nate, your permission for Daytona, like, is not unrecognized. You know what I mean? You got to get the clearance from the top. So.
Yeah, I had to, I had to go to him because I only have, you know, I can only do so much.
When,
I had to go to the owner, and he was down.
No, it's all good, man. We want to support our racers out there, and you know, you're getting out there and promoting our name and buying your bikes through us and doing your parts through. I mean, it's a collaborative partnership, and we're excited to have racers. We want to build on it, too. We want to build our own race team at some point and kind of take things to the next level. That's on our agenda for sure.
Yes, sir.
I'm kind of new to structuring that and building that type of thing out, but with the help of Dave and you guys, you know, I think we could really do something special.
Hell yeah.
There's some young talent. Dave was
Julian.
Yeah. That kid's quick.
He's on his way to he just signed with the British Supersport.
Really?
Yes.
That's pretty badass.
Yeah, he's amazing. The one that we sponsored for the track day.
Follow him on Instagram.
Yeah, he's amazing. And I can't wait to see what he does.
He was on Sean's bike down there, right?
Yeah. He was blistering fast. And then he shaved I can't remember. I want to say it was almost 6 seconds off his time when he went back to his bike after riding Sean's bike all day.
Right.
He was that much faster.
It was a still liter bike?
No, he went back down to his 600.
Mm.
So I want to do more with him for sure.
Yeah. He's a prodigy, that kid.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. So I guess as we wrap things up, do you have any what's the word I'm trying to think of? Yeah, a new racer, new person coming in to
advice. Yeah, advice for anybody wanting to get into it. This, and stuff like
maybe
that.
You know, you went at a whole other level, but for the average guy that just wants to get into it, what do you recommend?
Just take it slow.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Do some track days, figure out what you want to do. Get all the right equipment, right? Like, I've had some stuff that works well, some that doesn't.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Me too.
It just depends. And you know, budget.
Yeah.
Right. Budget's a thing. You know what I mean?
That's like a real thing.
You get down there and you see all these races that you can enter, and you're like, oh shit, I want to do all of it. You know what I mean? Because you throw a bigger net, you have an opportunity to catch more fish.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's also money, right? So
tires are expensive, gas expensive, everything.
Just I wasn't prepared to win. I was just prepared to get out there and have a good time. I knew I was going to do well.
Yeah.
Because I
told me you were going to do well. And I kind of, like, when you first meet somebody like that. But we kind of had this little click, like, as soon as I met you, you know, people don't understand you.
Right.
Right. And so for some reason, I kind of had some faith in you, but I didn't think it was going to be like this. I really didn't. And then all of a sudden you were just bam, bam, bam. I'm like, all right, we did right.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't thank you guys enough, man, for believing in me.
We're glad you're, awesome. You're a part of us.
So if someone wants to book a tour with, on the kayak thing.
FloridaAdventurer.com.
Okay. It's
Florida spelled out dash adventurer. ER.com.
Okay, awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Maybe we can do a recap after the next race season. Have you back on and talk about all your future.
Yeah, first race
expert,
is going to be
right?
in, yeah, 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 expert white plate. This year. Yeah, yep. White plate. So first race is going to be in April at CMP, right? Or, yeah, Carolina Motorsports Park.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's going to be a good one.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, brother.
Thank you, everyone, for watching. Go ahead and subscribe if you can. Check us out on socials. And you can probably find Josh on, what, like Instagram? Or what do you use?
You can find me on Instagram under Super Lux Frenchies.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You're a Frenchie
guy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, breed right. Frenchies, too.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Anyway, thank
for
you
watching.
For watching. We'll see you guys later.
Don't forget, rev up.
Yep.